Today, why the government's U-turn on A-levels solves some problems, but creates new ones too.
I'd get home, usually be straight up to my room, and then I'd be straight on with writing essays for my subjects, writing out any notes that I needed to. I'd spend most of my evenings during the week doing that. My study was intense, but it was worth it, or at least I thought it'd be worth it.
Before he found out that this year's A-level exams would be cancelled, Josh Reed spent all his time studying. In February, he'd gotten an offer to attend Oxford. He needed 3 A's to get in, and he was determined to get them.
I'd been on track for A star AA for a year and a half. I think in my mind I expected kind of a minimum of 3 A's.
Oxford had never been an obvious choice for Josh. Not many students from his state school in Woking went there, but it was shaping up to be an achievable dream. That is, until results day.
This is not how results day was supposed to be. None of the usual scenes of excited students opening their envelopes. Instead, a more somber atmosphere.
Josh, like thousands of other students, was bitterly disappointed by his algorithm-assigned grades.
Grades not postcards!
Grades not postcards!
Grades not postcards!
Grades not postcards!
Then, after a weekend of confusion, the government made a complete U-turn, throwing out its complicated algorithm in favor of teacher-assessed grades. From The Guardian, I'm Mythili Rao. Today in Focus, the government's A-levels fiasco. Laura, back in March when we went into lockdown, I think it's safe to say that most of us had very little idea of what to expect in terms of just how much this pandemic would shape every aspect of life for the rest of the year. But when it comes to this issue of what to do with A-level exams, when did the government start making a plan?
So right back at the very beginning of the pandemic, when Gavin Williamson, the Education Secretary, stood up in Parliament and said that schools would close for the foreseeable future.
After schools shut their gates on Friday afternoon, they will remain closed until further notice.
Back on that date in March, he said that exams would not be going ahead, so there would be no A-levels and there would be no GCSEs, but that students would be given a grade.
Education expert Laura McInerney is a regular columnist for The Guardian.
And so instantly from that point on, there was a decision made that some kind of grade would be given out, that it wouldn't just be given out by the teachers, there would have to be some kind of moderation and standardisation. And then 5 months nearly later, we find ourselves here.
And how did they come up with the plan of how these grades would be given out?
In England, there is already an organisation called Ofqual. They're the exams regulator. And their job every year is to make sure that the students in any particular cohort are not treated more generously or more strictly than students the year before or the students the year after. And sometimes that could happen if, for example, there was quite a big change in the way that exams are designed. For instance, you might go from having 2 1.5-hour exam papers to 1 3-hour exam paper. If that suddenly was found to be more difficult for students, what you wouldn't want is 1 year the results to dip dramatically, or if it was found to be easier, them to go up. So there's always been the regulator whose job was to use statistics and try and make sure that the exam grades didn't change too much. A decision was therefore made that once schools had put in a grade for the students that they felt best reflected what that student might have got in their exams, then the regulator, along with the exam boards, was going to do some statistical wizardry to try and get to a position where the grades would seem roughly in line with what had happened in the past.
Why was grade inflation such an issue?
I think there are a few problems when you end up with one year group who have much higher grades than other year groups. First of all, particularly with A-levels, universities will have given offers out on the basis that exams were going to run, and they give more offers out than usually students will achieve the grades. And then as students don't achieve the grades, they're able to get a cohort that is the right size. The second issue is the fairness issue for students on either side of that cohort. For example, we've got a bunch of students who are due to sit their A-levels next year. They will have missed around 5 months of school themselves. when they come to their A-level grades, they're going to be in the labour market in the future. They're going to be competing for jobs. They're going to be competing for education places up against some of those students from the year above. If they were to have half as many top grades, because that's what they would get in the exams, that would also seem unfair.
The idea that all students perform the same on average, year after year, wasn't that a bit of a strange assumption?
Yes and no. It's true at the national level. So in any given year, you're probably not going to have a year group who are wildly smarter than the year before or wildly less clever. And that's because when you're looking at hundreds of thousands of young people, on average, they're all about the same. But what they're not is individually the same. So it's the same as when you look at, say, 1,000 people in terms of height. You take two groups of 1,000 people, they've probably got a roughly similar average height. But of course, how any individual, how tall they are, is completely different. And so this statistical model was trying to do something on averages, which of course feels quite different at the individual level.
Can you explain precisely what data the algorithm was using to reach its decisions about individual student scores?
So the algorithm typically used the past 3 years of data from a school, so how the students had previously done. It used students' prior attainment, and it used the centre assessed grade, and that's the grade that was submitted to the exam boards by the school, which would guess roughly what the students were going to get if they had sat their exams. And then for different schools, depending on their size and depending on whether or not all of the data was complete, a formula was created which then predicted what grade each student was going to get.
And in terms of designing this algorithm, what were the government's top priorities and principles guiding them?
I think the two things that mattered the most were, number one, how can we keep the grades roughly similar to previous years, so there was no sudden shoot up in top grades, nor did the grades suddenly drop through the floor. They just wanted to keep things very even. And I do think there was a concern throughout this process that students with certain protected characteristics were not worse off. So there was a concern that students on free school meals in low-income families, or students of certain race, or students of a certain gender were not worse off. And when you look at those protected characteristics, the argument is that statistically, you can't say that any one of those groups has been treated badly. And so the government has probably got to the end of this process and thought, we've done a good job here. No grades have been inflated. No particular group of protected characteristics is worse off. But they haven't looked at some of the other problems.
Last week, students across England received their exam results.
Long faces and earnest discussion replaced the more familiar celebrations.
A-level and BTEC results day is never exactly stress-free. But this year, things have been of a different order.
Take us through what those results look like.
So around 60% of the grades were the ones that the teachers had estimated for a student. Around a third of them were moved by one grade, and then quite a small percentage were moved by more than one grade.
There's controversy because the figures for England show that 39% of grades were marked down, while 2% went up.
Now, unfortunately, it doesn't mean that 60% of students got what grades they were expecting. These are just the grades themselves. So as a student, you might have ended up having three of your grades drop down, or you might have ended up having none of them drop down. There's also a bigger complication that depends on the size of the number of students doing the subject in the school. So for example, if you're in a school or college where fewer than 15 people were doing your subject, then the calculation has been done slightly differently. And in fact, in some cases, your teacher's grades were accepted. And that's why we've seen some people in some schools and colleges actually getting quite high grades, or much higher than they were expected. In other places, it feels quite harsh. And if you were one of those people who had your grades dropped two or three grades, and that happened across all of your subjects, this feels incredibly unfair.
One student who had his grades unexpectedly knocked down was Josh Reed. It was unusual for students from his school to get straight A's. But after months of study, Josh was confident he was on track to do just that. Of course, when exams were cancelled, everything changed. Then his results came in.
I, as you can expect, did not sleep particularly well that night. And I don't think my mum did either. So I came downstairs and she was sat in front of the TV watching the news. Gavin Williamson might have been on at the time talking about the results. And there'd already been some indicators that the results weren't going to be great. But when I opened that email, it was quite a shock.
When Josh opened that email, his dreams of attending Oxford seemed to be over.
I opened up that email and I'd received ABC with a C in my best subject, which was philosophy, which I'd never got below an A in. I'd never got a C in. I was so shocked. I was screaming, this can't be right. This can't be right. They've got to have got it mixed up. The college must have sent me the wrong thing. This just cannot be right. I was initially so angry. I had worked so hard to get to the place where I was, where I had this offer from Oxford of 3 A's. You know, I'd spent so much time putting the work in. I just felt sick to the stomach because all of a sudden all that work was just completely undone.
One thing that really caused a lot of outrage was the way this algorithm seemed to reinforce class biases. Private school students were likely to see their grades go up, while state school students were likely to see their grades go down. Josh was a high-achieving student at a state school, and it seems like he was penalized for it. Shouldn't it have been easy to foresee that this might happen?
I was really surprised when that happened. I have to say, I'm still flabbergasted that we went into a situation where the top grades had inflated so much in the private schools. It was always going to be the case that there would be more adjustments within schools with the full ability range. And that's because if you're trying to estimate the grade of a student who is, say, a C grade student, of course, they could be a B, they could be a D. On a really good day, maybe they could get an A. On a really bad day, maybe they could get an E. So you've got a lot of options. If you work in a school that is selective, which some private schools are, and the majority of your students get A star, A, B, then actually your range is much shorter. And so it's much easier to make a estimated guess fit within an algorithm. So there was always going to be a shift more within the state sector. What seems to have happened, however, is because of this quirk around small centres, where those schools and colleges that have very few pupils doing a subject have been treated slightly more generously, that has amassed a set of advantage to some of the smaller private schools. And that's why we've seen the inflation. And of course, that really burns. If you are an 18-year-old who has, as I did, gone to a further education college in a deprived, challenging area, you have worked your socks off and you had a top university offer, and then because of an algorithm, you've been dropped down. Whereas someone around the corner who's always been in a class of three has been given their grade simply for being in a class of three. That is genuinely galling.
And I suppose what the government was saying in response to that is that overall, the number of A's and B's and C's that were awarded nationally through this algorithm was in line with what students achieved last year, right?
Absolutely. But that's a very rational argument when you're the person, as I've been, I was the head of a sixth form, when you're sat there with a student who is looking at a set of grades that don't bear any resemblance to what they were expecting or what you know that they can do. When their university is on the phone taking the places away from them, they're not going to hold them for appeal. That is absolutely devastating.
And the other thing that was so hard to swallow about this algorithm was the way it gave some students failing U grades, which are normally reserved for students who just don't turn up for the exam. And one blog I was reading said that this sort of amounted to the government randomly distributing events like a panic attack or your dog having died the morning of the exam or your boyfriend breaking up with you the night before. Events that probably would have happened to some students in a normal year, but that didn't necessarily happen to the students who got U's this year. Why was this so upsetting to students?
So the strangest thing about all of this was the U grades. I wasn't expecting them. I don't think most people were expecting them. And I guess although every year there is bad luck and there is misfortune, so a student might break their arm or lose a loved one in the run-up to the exams, all of those things happen randomly and they're all quite different. So you can get angry about being sick or you can get angry about the fact that you lost somebody. But this year, all of those different misfortunes have been rolled up into one thing, and it's the algorithm. And so, of course, the anger about those U's, which I think is completely fair, is also all pointed in one direction. And that direction is towards the exams regulator and the government.
Over the weekend, we heard more and more stories from very distraught students.
on results day, I opened my results. I just remember thinking, oh gosh, I've not got in. I just felt like everything had just been ripped apart because I didn't get into my firm or insurance offer. At first, I did cry a bit, I think, as most people probably did. But then I had that mindset of, right, we've just got to crack on and see what other options I've got for me going to uni this year.
For me, A-level results day could not have gone any worse. I got downgraded by 2 grades in all of my subjects, which is really unfortunate because I missed out on all my university offers. I was supposed to start at Liverpool University in September and study psychology, but unfortunately I can't do that anymore. I spent the majority of the day crying because I'd worked so hard. I did everything and I honestly relied on those exams to do well because I knew I was capable of it.
The Prime Minister had insisted that these grades were robust, as he put it.
The exam results that we've got today are robust, they're good, they're dependable for employers.
But there were protests.
Fair grades! Now! Fair grades!
And lawsuits,
now!
And Ofqual was updating its website with new information every few hours. And then on Monday afternoon, the government made a dramatic U-turn.
You can tear up those exam results. After vowing last week there'd be no U-turn and no change over A-level grading, today the Education Secretary bows to pressure and says that students will, after all, be awarded the grades given by schools and not by an algorithm.
They announced they would throw out the algorithm-derived grades and let students use teacher-assessed grades instead.
The evidence, both from Ofqual and other external bodies, was apparent that action needed to be taken.
How is this working so far?
So from what we know, students are now all across A-level and GCSE going to be given the centre assessed grade. So again, that's the grade that was submitted by the school or college as what the student should get. That means that the calculated grades, which some A-level students received last week and which GCSE students are due to get, are gone. So ultimately, everyone is back to their teacher or school submitted grades.
What's the downside to that?
Now the downside to that is that already tens of thousands of students have either not got their first offer of a place, so moved and accepted their second university offer, or they went through clearing. And of course, the space that was made available because some students missed their grades has already been given to other people. So now what we're essentially doing is we're trying to time travel and go back a week and say, right, reset button, everybody gets what their teachers submitted for them. On the other hand, what are we going to do about the universities? So all of the administrative burden of appeals and trying to deal with angry and upset students on the schools and colleges side has now been reverted to the universities, who are desperately scrambling around trying to work out how many places they've got available, who should have them, and whether or not they can in fact take everybody this year, especially when there's social distancing on top of everything else.
You mentioned that one of the government's original concerns was trying to prevent what it called grade inflation. It didn't want too many students to get good grades. And so this algorithm was designed to even things out. Does this new approach accomplish that, or do we now have a situation where more students have higher grades than anyone was really prepared for?
That's right. We are ending up in a worse situation if we think that grade inflation is bad, because now what's going to happen is students will get the higher of either what the school or college submitted for them or what the exams regulator calculated for them. So we've actually got an increase in terms of top grades because teachers had been slightly more optimistic for their students compared to previous years' achievements. But also we've got where the exams regulator was a little bit more optimistic or felt that students had to be pushed up to make things fair. So actually what we're going to see is the top grades go up quite considerably, much more than has ever happened in a single year before.
So this all falls on universities to figure out now.
Elite universities now have more offers that they are legally obliged to accept than capacity, especially with social distancing requirements. Fears turn to a reduced intake next year, which could be just as damaging for social mobility. And newer universities worry that they could be left without the students they need to survive.
What are they going to do?
So some universities are in a fortunate position where they've not made that many more offers than they had places available. So the University of Oxford, for example, only made a few hundred more offers than it had places. And some of the smaller colleges were able to come out straight away and say, we will honour every offer that we made, whatever your grades are. And that really depended on their accommodation and how much space they have and whether they knew international students. Some of them weren't coming back. In the case of other universities where they're now completely overwhelmed in terms of numbers, they are saying to students, you can come, we will give you a place, but it's going to have to be next year. And as many young people are saying, that means they're being forced into a gap year at a time when there are very few jobs available and travel is incredibly limited. So what are they supposed to do with that 12 months?
And what does that mean for applicants next year?
Yes, those who are currently in year 12, they've just missed out on 5 months of schools. They're supposed to sit their A-levels next year nevertheless. We don't know what their pass rate will be allowed to be, but was it to go back to being similar to other examined years, they would have far fewer top grades in which to compete in the university application process next year. And many of those spaces will already be taken up by the current year group who are now going to defer. So it is a bit of a mess.
Despite all the complications, this surely has come as a relief to a lot of students. But are there some students who are still losing out anyway?
One of the things that surprised many of the students is they had looked at their predicted grades, which is those that go on the UCAS form last year now, many, many months ago, which enable students to start applying to university. We know from prior research that about 75% of the time, those are higher than what the students get in their exams. So last week, you had a lot of students who said, I was predicted, say, AAA on my UCAS. And when they saw the actual grades of, say, CDD, they were extremely disappointed. Of course, they've now gone back to their school and said, well, what grade did you submit for me? And it might be somewhere in between, for example, 3 Bs. And I think that's caught people out again. So if there's a lesson from this, it's that more transparency was needed earlier in the system. The young people really ought to have known much sooner what their submitted grades were. And that would have given everybody a bit more information once the first university scramble was ongoing and not just continued to surprise everyone.
Coming up, what this means for how GCSE results are calculated. Laura, tomorrow GCSE results will be announced, and there was supposed to be a similar algorithm involved in awarding results, but the government has said that they're going to scrap it. What do you expect the reaction to results will be tomorrow?
Because this has all been done so late, it's been a little tricky to work out what exactly is going to happen on GCSE results day. So far, the guidance is that the school should provide the students with the grades that were submitted, known as the centre assessed grades. And then in another week, the students are going to learn what the algorithm would have given them. And then, of course, they can take whichever is the higher of the two. So what we've got now is yet another week's delay, and this drags out for another 7 days. But it should mean that on GCSE day, students are able to find out what their centre assessed grades were from their school. And hopefully that will be enough to get them into their college. What we're also not clear on is if someone doesn't agree with the centre assessed grade, what would the appeals process be for that? And who knows when we'll find that out, because everything is coming in so late at the moment in terms of the information.
It seems like there was never going to be a simple or easy solution to this. And we saw a preview to all of this with what happened in Scotland. But it's really turned into a complete fiasco here. Where exactly did the government go wrong?
I think if I could time travel now and go backwards with the benefit of hindsight, the bit where I would be encouraging both the government and the exams regulator to act differently is at the point where they realised that there were going to be a lot of outliers and edge cases. For example, those students that dropped down into the U grades. I think the exams regulator could have written a public letter stating that the aims of what the government were trying to do could be met, but that there would be some perverse consequences. And they could have laid those out with some plans for mitigation, in which, given that they had the calculations, they could have said, for instance, if we don't have any U grades, that will cause the grades to inflate by X percentage. Would that be an acceptable amount for the minister? At that point, of course, then it would have been public. There could have been more of a discussion and a sense check from across education professions. And also the students would have been given sight and awareness of that early on. And then the ministers could have made more decisions and it wouldn't have been such a surprise. That doesn't mean people wouldn't have been upset. And I can understand why, in the midst of a pandemic, the government is really trying not to cause furores and upset. But I think by trying to avoid it and hiding, they've actually made things worse. And then they had to make decision when the entire glare of the media was on them with crying children and an awful lot of pressure, and no one makes the best decisions under those circumstances.
At this point, the government seems to be putting the blame squarely on Ofqual, the exams regulator.
Then you should have known what was about to go wrong.
But there was absolute reassurance that this was the best and fairest route forward.
How is it trying to hold Ofqual responsible, and do you think that's fair?
Gavin Williamson, the education secretary, is claiming that he didn't really have sight of the problem or even the algorithm until after the results were out. And over the weekend, you know, a few days afterwards, then he sort of grappled with the difficulties, and therefore there was a discussion around whether to revert back to the predicted or the teacher assessed grades, as we should call them. The problem with that is I don't understand why Gavin Williamson didn't see it until late. First of all, the regulator published it on the day of results, but also you would think that in the days leading up to these results, he might have asked to see that algorithm. He might have asked to see some of the data for certain centres and get ready and practice what he was going to talk about. So I can't work out there why he got to the position where he didn't have the information. In terms of the exams regulator themselves, I suppose their argument is they tried their best. They came up with something that did what the government had asked them to do, but they realise now it's a step too far. There were too many quirks in the system, and hence they've rolled back. And I will at least give the fact that both of them have apologised to the students as something important here. It won't mean much to many of those young people, but it is something.
I'd like to say sorry. We have recognised the difficulty that young people have faced.
Of course, incredibly sorry for all those students who have been through this.
At the same time that all of this is happening, Education Secretary Gavin Williamson has also been under a lot of pressure to make sure schools reopen smoothly in September.
Schools have to be the priority. We need to get our children back into schools. That has to be the priority. But the government is running out of time.
Can he survive all of this?
There's an argument that it's not helpful to get rid of an education secretary in the middle of a crisis, because all that it does is it involves somebody new coming in who doesn't really know what's happening to try and marshal the troops. At the same time, it is very difficult when a minister who now has lost a lot of the trust and faith, I think, of parents and families, if he is also the person who is going to lead the charge to schools going back in September, without a great deal of social distancing, actually, because it's not that possible in schools, he has about 2 weeks in which he's got to win a lot of people's trust back. And I think that's going to be very difficult. So there is a judgment call now for the government to make as to whether or not maybe at the end of August, just before the school start, they remove him and put in place somebody else. That said, this government have typically been very, very loyal to their ministers. They don't tend to expect them to resign when they make a mistake. We may yet see Boris Johnson stand beside his education secretary and say everything is fine.
For Josh, the government's U-turn made a big difference. His grades were revised from an ABC to an AAB. It still wasn't what he'd hoped for, but it should be enough for him to go to Oxford after all.
I'm pretty happy at my end to finally get that sorted and just have this whole thing fixed.
It sounds like really good news, but you don't sound that excited. Are you just kind of tired at this point?
I am absolutely exhausted, as you might be able to hear. It has been a very, very stressful few days.
For a lot of students, this whole fiasco was about the difference between an A and an A star or a B and a C. In the grand scheme of things, how much do grades matter?
Well, grades matter a lot. I think to tell students that they don't matter is to be unfair, because especially at GCSE, the difference between a pass, which is the standard 4 grade, and a 3 is quite substantial. It's the difference between being allowed to do A-levels. It's the difference in future, for example, between being allowed to train as a teacher or not to train as a teacher. So these are big, big differences for students. And again, at the top end, the A star and the A, it may not feel like a massive difference between going to Oxford or going to a different university. But for that young person who has been told throughout their school career, if you work hard, if you try hard, as long as you turn up on that exam day and you get that knowledge and you get that grade, you are as able to go to those universities as anybody else, then that whole deal has just collapsed and it's been taken away, which of course breeds a sense of unfairness. Now, we can question whether that's right. Should such high stakes be placed on what are a couple of days in June or July when you happen to be 16 or 18? I think that's a serious question. But given that's what they've been told, no wonder they're so angry.
Laura, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Laura McInerney. You can read her columns at theguardian.com. My thanks to her and to Josh Reed, Amy Turnbull, Shaima Elazabi, and all the other students who shared their stories with us for this episode. Today's episode was produced by Courtney Youssef and Sam Colbert. Sound design by Axel Kakoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.